a donation to CIUT, you will help us reach our membership drive goal of $60,000 by Friday, November the 29th. You will also be eligible for the grand prize draws. You'll receive a tax receipt as well. So please make your kind donation today. It is an acknowledgement of how much you value and support the distinct music and spoken word programming CIUT offers year-round. Your investment helps CIUT now and in the future. Thank you.
The evolution continues. CIUT 89.5, Toronto.
Yes, y'all. Vibe Collective CAUT 89.5 FM. I'm Jams. And joining me in studio,
Mally, a.k.a. Docu Vixen.
And we've got to shout out the whole crew. Everybody else is not here. We are expecting Adrian, a.k.a. Griffin, shortly. But shout out to the rest of the crew who are all on assignment today. Kemba King, a.k.a. Meme. Victoria Grant and Swam.
Yeah.
So shout out and lots of love to all of you. We are the Vibe Collective. We're heard every Saturday from 3 to 5. From 3 to 4, we have roundtable talks. We talk about important issues like social justice, decolonization, identity, mental health, hip hop,
art, theater.
Environmental racism.
Oh, yes. Environmental racism.
Environmental justice.
Yeah.
And
hip-hop.
Then, that's right. And then from 4 to 5, the DJ is bringing music to move you, which we will be doing later on in the show. I've got a very, very special Ford Nation mix that I'm going to be sending out with lots of love to the city of Toronto. But first, we will get to our guests. I want to welcome, we have both of our guests live in studio with us right now. Glenn Pennell is the overall and queer programmer for the Rendezvous with Madness Film Festival. It's the 21st annual Rendezvous with Madness Film Festival coming up this week, November 11th to the 16th. Welcome, Glenn Pennell.
Great, thank you. It's great to be here.
Thanks for joining us. And we also have live in studio with us, Joella.
Joella Crichton, who is part of a theater play that's starting on Wednesday, November 13th, and it's going to the 17th. And it's Things Falling Apart, which is a new theater company, and it's our first production. And she's the feature lead actress in the one-woman play called The Session.
Woohoo!
So welcome to the Vibe Collective, Joella.
Thank you.
So, Glenn, we're going to talk with you first about the Rendezvous with Madness Film Festival. First of all, it's the 21st annual.
Yes, the film festival started in 1993. It was started by our executive director, Lisa Brown, as a way to basically show cinematic representations of mental health in film and also deal with addiction issues as a way of kind of destigmatizing the people who live with those issues.
And that's fantastic. I mean, we've had Rendezvous with Madness on the show before. We're really interested in talking, having dialogue about mental health. There's so much stigma around it, yet it's, you know, I think it affects everybody probably.
Oh, it does. It affects everybody. It doesn't matter on race or color or creed or religious. As long as you're a human being, I mean, we're and have a brain, we're affected by mental health. So, yeah. But what we do see happening now is the changes in perspective of mental health. Since our inception of 1993, attitudes are changing when it comes to mental health, and we're talking about it more in a way instead of using the stereotypical, you know, mad scientist or, you know, the people locked away in the mental hospital. Now we're showing showing and talking about people who we're seeing them as extraordinary instead of, say, disabled or crippled because of the mental health issues. And usually we're seeing this within the arts community because, you know, to have an artist... most, I would say, do have mental health issues, and which is practically why it makes their art great.
Definitely. I mean, the art therapy and also the creative mind tends to not fit into the standard that is set by society, which can create a lot of mental health issues as well.
Oh, that's correct. It could be environmental. It could be genetic. I mean, mental health can touch you at any time in your life. There's not one specific cause or, you know, trigger for it.
Right. So do you want to talk about first of all, what is an overall and queer programmer? What are some of the things that you're tasked with for programming for the Rendezvous with Madness Film Festival?
Well, specifically, I started as a programmer on the film festival 5 years ago. This is my fifth year now. And some of my responsibilities were screening films, researching other film festivals to find films that would fit into our mandate, as long as they had a mental health or addiction, some kind of component to them. And then we also have programming meetings. There are about eight other people on the programming committee. And so then we can sit and discuss, you know, our opinions of the films. We have a range of different professionals on our programming committee, anybody from having lived experience to actual psychiatric professionals or anybody in the psychiatric industry, such as social workers. So we get a really good all-around perspective, and then we decide what films we can put into the festival based on the mandate.
So do you want to talk about, I know you mentioned before we started the show, there are a few films, there are three films in particular that that you're really excited about, and maybe you want to share that with the audience.
Yes, well, three films. First would be a film called Alien Boy, The Life and Death of James Chase. Now, the reason why we find this is important for our film festival is because it's a film about an artist who struggled with schizophrenia, and it examines the actions of police officers that were responsible for his death. Now, as we know, this summer in the city of Toronto, we did have a streetcar shooting, the death of Sami Yateem, who was a teenager who dealt with mental health issues. And as we all saw with that video, it was clear that there could have been other actions taken. So we're going to be having a panel discussion, as we do with all of our films at Rendezvous. And this specific panel, we'll be having seven panelists, and one of them will be the deputy chief, Michael Federico. So this should make for a very good, interesting panel discussion, as well as we also have the film director who will be coming in, Brian Lindstrom from Portland. And he was around at the time of James Chase, where basically James was an artist, and he was in Portland around the time that the grunge scene was all becoming really big. So he'll be able to give some extraordinary insight into what had happened there as well.
And you mentioned there were a couple of other films that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, another film, too, is called Soul Survivor. And I especially love this film. This was the first film that I got to program this year. And it's about four soul survivors of plane crashes. I'm not sure if you're aware, but internationally there have only been 14 planes that have crashed that have had one soul survivor on it. So this is a documentary about one of those survivors who now later on in life is coming to terms with this and wants to reach out to other survivors who are soul survivors in plane crashes. And it's a very heartwarming story of hope and, you know, healing to see what they go through. And I have to admit, I cried when I watched it. So I would say totally come out and see that movie. And that would be playing at our Workman Arts Theater And that would be on Thursday, November 14th at 9 p.m. So I would urge everybody to come out and see that film.
And before we get to the other film, can you talk about accessibility for these films? First of all, are the theaters accessible? And also, what are the costs?
Oh, well, the theaters are fully accessible. We're showing at the TIFF Lightbox downtown, as well as at our Workman Arts location at 651 Dufferin Street, which is at the Dufferin and Dundas areas. We do have free parking, which is available access via Gladstone Avenue. And it is wheelchair accessible, and prices range anything from a pay what you can or to a $12 minimum, or for some of our more special events, ticket prices vary. But all of this information is available on our website at rendezvouswithmadness.com, as well as workmanarts.com.
That's great. I'm really happy to hear that it is accessible, because that's something that... oftentimes with these festivals, people with accessibility issues are left out if there's a couple of steps or something like that, and then they don't have access to such a great festival.
Yes, well, with being the nature of our festival, we want to include everybody, and we encourage everybody to come out.
Yeah, I can imagine that would be an important component. So I do want to welcome to the studio one of our collective members.
What's up?
Adrian Worrell, a.k.a. Griffin.
That's right.
And so, Adrian, just to catch you up, we are speaking with Glenn Pennell, who is the overall and queer programmer for the Rendezvous with Madness Film Festival. It's the 21st annual, and it's taking place November 11th to the 16th. We've just been talking about some of the films that he's been programming, and you said there's one more film that you were really excited about. I'm sure you're excited about all the films.
Oh, yes, definitely. But the one, it's not actually a film, but it's a special live podcast, the recording of the Mental Illness Happy Hour, and we're going to be having a special guest, Scott Thompson of Kids in the Hall. So he's going to be there to record an honest and humorous discussion about how Thompson's life has been affected by mental health issues, which are so often prevalent in the creative arts community. So this is the first stop in Canada for this special podcast hosted by Paul Gilmartin. So that will happen at 4 o'clock on Saturday, also at our Workman Arts location.
So before we wrap up with you, Glenn, can you talk about what you hope some people who are attending for the first time will come away with? What do you hope what perspectives are you hoping they'll gain?
I'm hoping that will actually showcase people that deal with mental health issues in a better light, more as extraordinary people rather than people who are demarginalized. And we'd like to take the discrimination and the prejudice out of this by showing these people in real light with these moving films and with showing the type of art that can be created out of somebody that has or is dealing with mental health issues.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, we're really excited to have been able to talk to you today about Rendezvous with Madness. As I said, we've had Rendezvous with Madness on the show before, and it's a really critical issue that... It's great that you're doing this work.
Well, it is great. Yeah. Thank you very much. It was great to be here.
Yeah.
Maybe you should just plug where people could get connected and get the full schedule of the festival.
Yeah. Yes, again, you can also get the full schedule at rendezvouswithmadness.com. Or if you'd also like to call, you can call the TIFF Bell Lightbox line at 1-888-599-8433, or you can also pick up tickets in person at the Bell Lightbox or at our door at 651 Dufferin Street, which is at Dufferin and Dundas location. Our building is called Workman Arts. Also, there is free parking accessible via Gladstone Avenue.
Wicked. So,
if we're talking mad people, are we going to talk about Kanye West? Did we bring that up yet?
No, we haven't. We were waiting for you. Oh,
thank you. Appreciate that.
Rob Ford. I mean, but we're not. But again, like, these are people who are struggling with real mental illness, right?
Oh yeah, no doubt. I say it a little facetiously, but certainly, you know, and like more Kanye West. I don't think he's quite as dangerous as Rob Ford at this kind of point. But just interesting to see, like, over the space of time, like, how in some sense, like, some very clear, to me anyway, because I've had experiences with schizophrenics, how some very clear symptoms seem to be manifesting in his behavior, his speech, his facial patterns. And yet people, there's a real reluctance to engage that, you know, as to what that might mean, that somebody who you've liked for this long or who's put out this, you know, arguably genius work is now suffering from symptoms, or the symptoms are becoming more apparent. And the way, different ways that the conversation just kind of carefully doesn't deal with that.
And then also the interaction with, like, you know, the cult of celebrity, and how that influences that whole kind of being able to deal with certain issues, right? Because you're in sort of like this, you know, bubble that is celebrity.
And you're told that everything that you're doing is okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is the cult of personality, right?
That's,
yeah.
But there's also another narrative of, like, the black celebrity who goes insane, right? So if it's Martin Lawrence, if it's Richard Pryor, if it's, who else do we have?
Oh, the black comedian.
Cat Williams.
Cat Williams. Like, you know, so it's like, it's almost like this kind of rite or ritual where it's like sooner or later, you know, somebody, Dave Chappelle, somebody that's working in
Arsenio Hall. Will have some kind of mental.
Oh, I didn't know Arsenio Hall had a.
Well, back in the day, yeah.
Okay.
Have some kind of mental breakdown.
Yeah, certainly. Mm-hmm. So, but it's like we've seen it time and time again. And here it is pretty much, you know, clearly in terms of with Kanye West. But it's, again, there's a way of not talking about what's happening, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to watch unfold again and again.
And again and again.
And again and again.
So we're just going to shift gears a little bit because we've got on the phone with us, and I know he's calling in from work, so I know he doesn't have a lot of time to talk. But we do have Joella in studio with us. Joella, sorry,
hi.
Your last name.
It's Crichton.
Crichton. and on the phone we have Tian Providence.
Providence, yes.
Who is the writer and director and artistic director of Things Falling Apart Theater and the upcoming production of Things Falling Apart. Session.
Yes.
Which is November 13th. Hi, Tian. Welcome to the Vibe Collective.
Hello. Well, thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So you all have been working on this.
I basically started working with Tian in February, and he actually approached me, you know, about this idea of doing a theater company that focuses on Caribbean writers, Canadian Caribbean writers, and basically having, you know, a space to produce their work. So this is our very first production, and Tian actually wrote the script, so he could actually talk about his script, the session.
Alrighty. Should I go ahead?
Yes.
I was waiting for a question. You know?
Okay, so basically maybe talk about the story of the session and maybe a little bit of, you know, the process of writing the script.
Yeah, well, the session is the story of a young woman who is being charged within the prison system, and she had to go through a psychiatric assessment to see if she's in any mental, like her mental capacity to stand trial is like proper, like you usually do that assessment. So in that assessment, the story is based within that psychiatrist's office, where she has to reluctantly relive everything she has done in the past for the 3.5 years that she's ended up being on the street since she left home after a fight with her mother, and then ends up on the street looking for some way to get ahead because she has dreams of being somebody, being like a successful person and grasping onto any little straw that kind of promises that and usually ends up being betrayed. So that basically is the short synopsis of the piece. And as for writing the piece, I was inspired one day by watching a video of Roxanne, which was the police, Sting and the police actually did it first, but I never paid it any attention until George Michael did it. He slowed it down, jazzed it up, and I started listening to the lyrics, and I go, oh, okay. And then an idea started forming, and it started growing and growing, till I couldn't put it, like I just started writing, putting it down. And like I look back on the script now and I'm going, well, when did I write that? it's been a while since I've put this down. I've been trying to get it produced for like about 8 years now. One producer liked it, but he didn't want to work with me as a director, so he's trying to find another director and he couldn't get one. And then the last one I tried to work with, the theater was sold out on him. The theater building is now a condo building, so that kind of killed that dream. So
gentrification.
Yeah. Classic Toronto story, right?
Yes.
There.
Yeah.
So, Tian, we've been talking with Glenn Pinnell, who's the programmer from Rendezvous with Madness Film Festival. We've been speaking about mental health issues on the show today. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about, and then Adrian was alluding to, or specifically speaking about, you know, black and people of African heritage and with a celebrity status and the impact of mental health and how it's almost, celebrated when somebody has a mental quote unquote breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about some of the things that were informing your character development and because it's taking place in a psychiatric office.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about mental health and among the Caribbean and black community?
Well, this is interesting because yesterday I was talking to Norman and doing an interview, and we got to the fact that it's something that black folks, Caribbean folks, usually try not to talk too much about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost something that you'd want to hide in the background and not really deal and discuss this whole old thing. And this is why, I guess, when some of our celebrities do that, it's almost like, okay, it's a celebrity, it's all going to be all right, he'll be fine. But, again, there's never really been a big step within the community to deal with it as such. And a lot of my plays that I've written have kind of ended up, I don't know why, but it has seen, because I had a friend who actually ended up losing his mind, a great talent, pianist, a great pianist. He was huge in Trinidad. He was a part of one of the big bands there, and then he came here, and then he just lost his mind, right? And he ended up on the streets for quite a long time. So this all these inform me, because nobody seems to want to, like, talk about it in a very serious way that it should be.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's something that should come more to the fore, and let's discuss it, because there's so much people of African descent who I walk around the streets with a mental breakdown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the language, even the language of speaking about someone who's mad.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, that's actually what a lot of people in the mental health grassroots activism are. They're pulling on that word rather than talking about, you know, especially language like crazy or mm-hmm. or insane. It's talking about madness.
There's a certain glamour to madness, a certain grandiosity, I think, captures.
Right. That's why the film festival is called Rendezvous with Madness.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So, Joella, do you want to talk about you're starring in the play? Do you want to talk about your process, first of all, as an actress, researching this role, and what are some of the challenges that you've been faced with?
Yeah, I would love to talk about that. I think what's really difficult about acting a character like this is you can't judge. That's the number one step. You can't judge the character at any point in time, and you have to accept who they are and love them as they are. I think I've always wondered how people end up in that position. How does it happen? And luckily, this story answers that a lot. The character, Roxanne, she's sitting in that place where she knows that she's becoming crazier. She knows she's sitting in between the two lines of being healthy and being mentally ill. And she doesn't want to consider herself crazy. She doesn't want to ask those questions. And, you know, as researching the character, I don't think it involves wondering what it's like to be crazy. It's not that. It's feeling those moments where she was hurt real bad and why that made her, ooh, we've got a ghost in here. Wondering those moments about what the pain that she suffered and why it made her feel upset or hurt or crazy in those terms. Mm-hmm. It's the show's a challenge for me, and we've been talking about this in rehearsal like crazy, because it's about 90 minutes and it's just me.
Wow.
So it's one huge big monologue, and it's a lot of ups and downs, and sometimes, you know, some shows they only have one big bump or two big bumps to get over, but this is about 15 big bumps, right? Because I'm reliving my entire life in this 90-minute show. So it's very tiring, but I think that it's worth it. It's so worth it to tell it because, you know, this poor girl, it's so sad to hear and see somebody this happen to somebody, and I see it all the time around town. So, mm-hmm. yeah, mm-hmm. I'm glad that we're doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, especially as a Black character. It's okay to see somebody like that. And a lot of people are afraid to witness it. They don't want to sit there and witness pain. They just, you know, but it's important to do that.
Yeah. And I think it's also important to acknowledge that, you know, this whole idea of mental health or mental illness, I mean, it's never as straightforward as just a mad person walking the street talking to themselves. There are all different nuances to mental health and mental illness and different ways in which it can manifest. And I think it affects probably more people than not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's part of the fear. I remember one time I was downtown, and it's a story I tell all the time, where, you know, we're visiting a friend in the hospital, and there was a guy who came in. He sounded like he was from the States, a Black man from the States. And he just started going in on us. He was just cussing us up and down. I don't know what we did. We didn't do anything to him, but he just figured to take it out on us, right? Mm-hmm. And we were just cool. I was a lot younger this time. And, you know, we were standing in McDonald's, and we ended up buying him some food or something like that, mm-hmm. right? And he suddenly just snapped out of it and started saying, yo, thank you very much. And he was speaking in this kind of really clear, cogent way. And I was like, what was that? Mm-hmm. And the woman who worked at McDonald's, she was like, yeah, he came in here. We first saw him here around 6 months ago. He came in every day at, like, this time. He was wearing a suit. He had a briefcase. He had a job down so-and-so. And just slowly over time, things unraveled to this point where he was just living on the street and just kind of, you know, showing up at places and speaking incoherently to what have you. Mm-hmm. And it just happened in a very short space of time. And I think that's part of the fear. And there's a lot of things going on, part of the reluctance of talking about mental health issues, that this literally could be, or maybe even has been at some point, you know, other people or you in a sense, right? Yeah. And so how do you deal with that? And, you know, and there's already so many other things to worry about. That's another thing to put on someone's plate, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Tien, do you want to talk a little bit more about some of the influences or inspiration for this character, specifically related to mental health, and also what is the message in her story, The Session?
Well, the session, I think for me, the story I like to get across is that you got to be careful how you treat people, basically, how you, you know, you see them, you make, like, a lot of people promises a lot of things. Inadvertently, they say things to certain people that people hold on to and have a different meaning towards it. It's like, because in the Roxanne held on to things because it was like she needed to clutch any straw that to keep her from drowning, right? Mm-hmm. So, and then when being betrayed, there's a betrayal within it, the fact that she's reaching out for her mother's love despite the fact that she does not understand like her relationship with her mother and all of that. So throughout the whole play, she goes back and tries to, like, mommy, I don't understand this, you know. That kind of, even if when she's on the street, she wants to talk to her, so she keeps playing that to the psychiatrist. That's for the inspiration. There's a lot of people that I see. I remember I had a cousin who worked in the mental institution. She would tell me about, you know, there was a woman who in there who believed that she was not a Black woman, right? She was a totally Black woman, but she had this belief that, and you see the damage that, you know, a lot of history of Black history has done to the people over the years, right? So this is, you know, there was like, and music, of course, powers me a lot. I will listen to a lot of music. I try to listen to the lyrics of it, even the music of, you know, the instrumental, like the jazz. There's a piece that we'd use in it, which is, comes from Max Roach's protest against the apartheid that was happening in America in the civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. So there's this piece where it sung like a mad woman just screaming, you know, and this is sort of protest. So these are a lot of things that was going through my mind when I worked on that for at least over a year writing that script.
Well, we have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll probably be we'll just wrap up with you, Tian, and let the people know where they can see the play, and we'll be getting into a discussion, continuing the discussion on mental health related to the mayor of Toronto and what the fiasco that has become.
Not the mayor, but the voters, I'd say.
The voters, as well as the political, the whole political sphere, I think, of Canada is affected by mental health, arguably. So, you are listening to The Vibe Collective. We'll be back after this very brief message here on CIUT 89.5 FM.
CIUT 89.5 FM is made possible by listeners like you. You make it possible for this station to remain on the air and bring you unique, alternative, and diverse content you want. 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. So, on behalf of all the volunteers that make up CIUT 89.5 FM, thank you. CIUT 89.5 FM, the sound of your city.
Did you know you can listen to CIUT 5 different ways? Online, on satellite TV, digital cable, on FM radio, and on the go. Find CIUT online at iTunes Radio under Campus University, or go to the live stream at www.ciut.fm. You can also locate us on satellite at Star Choice Channel 826, Rogers Digital Cable Channel 946, and Bell 5 Channel 970. Listen to us on the go with TuneIn Radio's free app. And don't forget, we're on the FM dial at 89.5 FM. Spread the word. The evolution continues. CIUT 89.5 FM.
CIT 89.5 FM, just like the ID says, this is The Vibe Collective. I am Jams, joining me in studio,
Adrian Griffin Worrell,
Mally, aka Docu Vixen.
And shout out to the rest of The Vibe Collective crew who are all on assignment today. They are Kemba King, aka Meme, Victoria Grant, and Luam. Enough love to the whole crew. And special shout out to Adnan. In Halifax.
Yes.
In Halifax.
Yes, yes. So we're The Vibe Collective. We're heard every Saturday from 3 to 5. From 3 to 4, we have roundtable talks. We talk about important issues like social justice, decolonization, identity, celebrity...
Studies.
Oh, yes, indeed. mental health issues, environmental racism, and hip-hop arts.
And all their intersections. You got to say that nowadays to sound like, you know, you're... academic stuff. So.
Yeah, no, that's definitely one of the what do you call it? Jargon.
Just,
yeah,
it's a buzzword.
Yeah. Intersectionality.
Intersectionality.
That's what we do every Saturday. We reason about these things. And then from 4 to 5, the DJs bring you music to move you, which we will be doing. I've got a special Ford Nation set I'll be sending out to Toronto and to Rob Ford. and then DJ Griffin will be taking over after, and yeah, that's how we do. And we are in studio with Glenn Pennell, who is the queer and overall programmer from the Rendezvous with Madness Film Festival.
Hey there.
Hey. We also have Joella Crichton live in studio. She is starring in the session, and on the phone we have writer and director and artistic director Tian Providence. Yes.
Welcome.
So we have been talking about mental health issues today on the show. The session is premiering on November 13th, correct?
Right. Yes. That is correct.
And it goes until the 17th. And tickets are $15. And it is going to be taking place at the Red Sandcastle Theater, which is at Queen and Logan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 922 Queen Street.
922 yeah. Queen Street. So, yes.
I just want to, just before we wanted to move on, I just wanted to ask, I guess, a little bit, just a question to Tian. You know, your idea behind things falling apart, and maybe talk a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah. The name, when we were looking around for a name early in February, Chinua Achebe had just passed on, the great Nigerian writer, and his one of his breakthrough book was called Things Fall Apart, actually, and it's based around the colonization of his home country, Nigeria, when the missionaries and the British moved in and was turning all of the African religions upside down by enforcing the Christian religion, right? So I thought that was really a good name for that, and then we just put in the ink to keep make a little different. So if you were to Google us, you'd get Things Falling Apart, not Things Fall Apart, the book.
Yeah, that's clever. You wanted to differentiate
and be
able to be found.
Yeah,
definitely. Well, I mean, the legacy of colonization is something that is an ongoing part of our weekly reasoning. And certainly mental health is directly related to, I think, you know, the legacy of colonization and the impacts, the way in which, you know, we've talked about all of the different aspects of how things like psychic torture, internalized racism, lateral racism, and how those affect people's spiritual selves, their mental selves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really on a multi-leveled way. So one of the other ways in which I think people, mental health affects people is through addiction. And addiction is the latest topic in Toronto politics. Whether or not our mayor is addicted to...
You couldn't even give Ford a break. Like, you're going to really pile on right now. Like, you know what trouble this guy has right now? And you're
yes,
just, oh.
yes, yes. But no, but we're coming at it from we're trying to look at it from a perspective that is not the focus of the mainstream, which is mental health. I know you're teasing.
Well, the one thing that I would like to bring up that I don't think anybody has actually noticed about this is that I'm kind of feeling for all of the addicts or recovering addicts out there.
Yeah.
With all of this media attention about crack, 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 I could just imagine what these people are going through right now.
That's a good point.
Because this drug is so strong that, you know, 20 years of not doing it, is something could trigger you again to do this. You will always have that with you. So I almost think, like, I don't want to say the media is being irresponsible, but I would just like to put that out there that let's be thinking about these people who are, like, now struggling. I mean, you can turn off the news and stuff, but, I mean, just even walking here, people on the subway talking about everybody talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just really feeling for those people, and I think, you know, should be thinking about that.
It's somewhat like trivializing sort of like what people have to do to actually kick a habit, you know, like, and the daily sort of, you know, what you have to go through where you're actually, suffering from addiction. So.
And what you said on Twitter, Melinda, last week is the irony is that he's cut all the funding to the programs that he clearly, you know, needs. And not just him, but the people that we're talking about, the people who are, you know, not in a position of privilege or power and who are struggling with addiction and who don't have access to the services that are necessary to address those issues.
Exactly. And I mean, those services too still need more money for people. It's not exactly the easiest thing. I think some people think that you can just walk up the street and say, go to CAMH and just go into rehab and everything get better. No, there's a process. It takes months. And, you know, through that struggle, you know, you can go there and then you take two steps back and then get to that point again. I think we need better access to for addiction. And as you said, you know, he's cut money towards that. So what are you supposed to do? You know, it's hard to recover from drug addiction. So
absolutely. And alcoholism, I mean, there's no question he's got a problem with alcohol. Whether or not he does have an addiction to crack cocaine remains to be seen. We don't know. But there, you know, there's been a lot of evidence that's come out of the last week.
Well, I mean, his own admission, right? That, and him saying, like, well, I might have done crack, but it was in my drunken state.
It was
of
in
drunken
a drunken stupor. One of my drunken stupors.
One of my drunken stupors. You know, and like that's kind of how sometimes it happens. I remember I was once in a group because I allegedly had a cannabis addiction. And another story for another time. And so I'm in this group anyway. And I ended up going to this group. And like, you know, just asking like, well, why is it that we say, you know, if you have any kind of addiction, you shouldn't drink. And, you know, one of the guys who was himself dealing with a crack addiction, he's like, well, you know, you start with a couple of beers, and then after a while you're like, what the heck? Next thing you know, you're lighting up a rock, you know? And it's like, I don't think it's necessarily like that for everybody, but for some people, that's certainly the kind of pathway. And it would seem that, you know, he's, you know, he likes his chemistry set, as it were. And this is what happens with Rob Ford. And it's a question as to how did he get to this point. And it's also a question to how he's kind of like kept in this position of, you know, whereas other people who have these addictions, they're either locked up or other things happen to them, right? And so I think it's a real, there's a real chance to look at how, in some sense, class and color, or so, some sense, insulate certain people who have, you know, same the kind of problems that other people have, but are, you know, they're treated completely differently.
Yeah, mm-hmm. When they're in positions of power, and but you know, let's not forget that, you know, there was a lot of talk earlier in the year about the relationship to crime that his family has.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And people who've grown up in Etobicoke have been talking about this the whole time, right? The fact that this family is allegedly being alleged dealers.
Kemba right now is saying yes, thank the Lord.
Of alleged cocaine and other drugs. And are also known for their violence. And then this video came out 2 days ago that the Toronto Star released, where we hear and we see Rob Ford in a rage, ranting about killing somebody. Now, my daughter and I have been arguing. To me, it sounds like he's arranging a hit. This is what it sounds like to me. I'm not saying this is what it is. This is my interpretation. It sounds like he's hiring to kill somebody, but he wants 5 minutes or 15 minutes. He wants 15 minutes to go at the guy and kill him, finish him off with his own hands. The guy is saying, these guys are professionals. And he goes, that's great, but I want in. I want 15 minutes. The guy says, that's too long. 5 minutes. And he says, no, I need more time. I want to kill him. I will kill him.
It sounded like that to me, too.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
To me, it sounded like he was auditioning for The Sopranos. I don't think that was indicative of anything untoward at all.
All right, guys. That was really cool. But I do have to leave.
Okay, Ken, Providence. Yes, we're talking to you at work today. So thank you so much for joining us. Once again, the session premieres November 13th at the Red Sand Castle Theater. You are the writer, director, and artistic director of Things Falling Apart Theater. And thank you for joining us, Tian.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Okay. All the best.
Bye-bye.
So you were saying, Joella, it sounded like that to
you. Yeah, it did.
Yeah, I mean, and so, you know, it's funny on the one hand. It's funny that, you know, all of this evidence is coming to the surface, especially when back in May, this whole circus began. You know, he was so indignant in the media, saying that the media is persecuting him, basically.
Can we really blame Rob for that? I mean, that's standard. Look at Lance Armstrong, who was like blood doping for every single race, and he was like, "Oh, I would never do anything like that." Rafael Palmeiro, the first thing you do is when you're caught, and I have a friend who works in PR. Deny, then deny some more. Get indignant. Bring your family out. Deny.
His mom and sister were on yesterday.
I saw that.
Yeah.
That's standard PR procedure. Oh. We can't blame 40 for that one.
Yeah, that's true. I saw Bill Clinton on TV, his speech on about him being like, I did not have sexual relationships with that woman. And then they slashed to like a couple of days later. He's like, I did.
I did.
It's like a nice denial, bud.
Well, my favorite is when they play with verb tenses, when he's like, Bill was all like, depends on what your definition of is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
this guy doesn't care about nothing. Like, when I heard that, I'm like, this guy wants to bring out like, you know, the past participle and all kind of grammatic. It's like, you did it, man. Like, isn't it?
There's no debating is.
No, this thing is.
Yeah. But, you know, the thing is that this person, Rob Ford, has access to a $10 million budget.
Mm-hmm.
And makes decisions that impact people's lives, you know, cut funding to very, very much needed programming for communities, you know, and again, he took this high moral position, which he, you know, in his mind was highly moral. We all know that it was flawed, mm-hmm. saying, you know, tough love and hug a thug, calling them hug a thug programs and, you know, talking about tough love for specifically for addicts. And, you know, we're seeing more and more that evidence of what a lot of us have been, you know, trying to call attention to, which is, you know, questionable judgment, questionable morals, questionable ethics. and then, you know, it's reflective of the Canadian government on a whole. I think, you know, we're seeing all kinds of scandals coming out of Ottawa, left, right, and center. The big one is the Senate scandal. But, you know, those of us in the Indigenous community are very familiar with the other scandals, the RCMP abuse scandals, the missing and murdered women, and the refusal to have a national inquiry on that.
But when there's a protest, you can't. There's like 200 RCMP officers just show up and they're ready to go, right?
Right, exactly. Exactly. The Elsa Puktuk, the people in Elsa Puktuk trying to protect their land on unceded Indigenous territory, and the RCMP protecting foreign corporate interest. You know, we're seeing madness at all levels of government in the Canadian government.
I just want to go back to like a city sort of municipal and you know inter you know like talking about the province and the federal levels. What I thought was interesting because watching the whole you know circus that's happening in City Hall is that politically, you know, Ford is losing ground. He's basically, his supporters are like, you know, retreating.
Where, in city council, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, because his approval rating is actually up.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about actual, like, within council, within like, you know, financial, you know, interests within the city.
Oh, wow.
I'm not talking about...
Well,
yeah,
I know. I hope so.
No, like, so I'm not talking about Ford Nation at all. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about his allies, his support, his political supporters that are basically distancing themselves. The Sun is speaking against him. Like, come on. Like,
yeah, you gotta do something bad for the Sun.
You mean
to be
his like
yeah.
he lost his radio show. 640 I was listening to 640. They're distancing themselves. 640 is like the most right wing, like, yeah. You know.
Yep.
So it's interesting. And so and then they were actually, the media was just like talking about how, you know, Queen's Park should go in and take over, which I thought was disturbing in general, because there's no reason why, you know, council, we do have councillors that run the city. There's no reason why we can't actually, you know, I guess, you know, basically run the city without the, you know, the circus of the mayor.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just wanted to put out there because, like, you know, yeah, he might have, like, you know, popular support, but if you look at his allies and his supporters, they are retreating.
I'm going to totally shift gears for a second because you said Sun Media and it triggered something, reminded me of something that we need to talk about on the show. We are located, CIUT 89.5 FM is located in Hart House on the U of T campus.
Right.
We are a community radio station, and Hart House is a student center. It's a student. It's a long saying. It used to be for men only, and then back in the 60s, they let women in. Woohoo! And they have an alumni committee, and the alumni committee runs a dinner program, a dinner series. And they have somebody coming in next week that I'm really hoping that people will protest and call Hart House and let them know that this is unacceptable. This person is known to be a racist hate monger. He is a sad excuse for a journalist at Sun Media. His name is Ezra Levant, and he will be here on Wednesday here at Hart House talking about ethical oil.
Oh, man.
Ezra Levant has a hate on for Indigenous people, and he has a TV show on Sun. I'm just, in case anybody isn't familiar with Ezra Levant.
Never heard of him.
You better get to know him.
I was at dinner with Christy Blanchford. I couldn't.
That's his wife. That's his evil twin sister.
Don't tell him.
They're very, very similar, those two. And he is known for spewing hate about Indigenous people. He is there have been complaints to the CRTC about him because of the hate mongering that he puts out there about Indigenous people. Mm. He's completely ignorant and has no business talking about ethical anything, certainly not ethical oil, as if there is such a thing. So that is happening.
Well, I'm going to look this guy up. Like,
yeah, yeah. No, people need to be aware of this guy, and they need to be aware of the fact that, you know, the Hart House Alumni Committee has this dinner series.
Which with a lot of lovely people.
Yeah.
And you could actually pay to go see.
Yeah. there are a few people who are interesting who are on this. John Tory, Paul Godfrey. But really, Ezra Levant is just like, I'm shocked that Hart House would bring in such a person. I don't have words, but that's happening Wednesday, November 13th here at Hart House. The tickets are $70 if you want to attend that. and U of T takes a
at a university.
Yeah.
Some rich students.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And it is the Hart House Alumni Committee, who have organized that. But again, listeners out there, might want to organize a sort of welcoming committee for Ezra Levant. There have been many protests. If he's showing up somewhere, a lot of people tend to go and protest because he's a racist hate monger. He is like the lowest of the low on the airwaves. Oh, uh-oh. We're going to get
him.
A complaint. I'm going to take this call.
Okay,
anyway. I want to see who's calling.
Yeah. So anyway, like, that's what I was, noticing, going back to Rob Ford, just like the political, movings behind them, the circus show.
That's part of the cycle, right? Because unfortunately, it's basketball season, and only half my brain's working. And so, I'm relating this to the Kobe Bryant scandal, right?
Where, I didn't even know that was going. What's going?
Well,
on?
I mean, that's what happened when he was, you know, caught doing what he was doing. All his sponsors dropped him. They're like, "Oh my gosh, Kobe Bryant!" You know,
right?
Slowly but surely.
They come back,
right? So it's like sometimes it gets a little bit too stinky, even for the Sun or whoever else. But should you withstand, then, you know.
Well, like, interestingly enough, I thought when he first admitted, like, I was convinced he was going to take a break, right? That he was going to go and be like, okay, I need a break, a leave of absence, and he was going to run again, and people would have forgotten. Politically, that would have been genius.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, no, I'm not leaving.
No. Entitled. His entitlement to his position is a little much.
Little. And then it's also the approval ratings, you know, right. Where it's
well,
like.
Yeah, no, he's like, I don't have to leave. Yeah.
Coordination.
Yeah,
he's like, people are still, you know, there's an article that I skimmed. I didn't get a chance to read. It's talking about, like, Toronto is a city of enablers, you know.
Oh, yeah, and John Stewart actually said that on the air this definitely. Week. He said, listen, Toronto, you know, if you're, and the approval rating goes up and he's still here, well, you're a city of enablers.
Okay.
That's true.
And
I mean.
We knew, a lot of people knew who Rob Ford was before this happened.
Because
when the story broke about, like, oh, you know, the family's this and that, and I'm like, hey, did y'all know that? And they're like, oh, yeah. It's like, you voted for this guy knowing that?
But this is the climate of Canada. we have a prime minister who can lie about billions of dollars spent on F-35 jets, who can have a Senate scandal, a robocall scandal, a fraudulent poll scandal, can muzzle scientists.
Prorogue government like three times.
Prorogue government through access to information. It's proven that the oil industry wrote two of the omnibills that have changed all of the environmental protection laws in Canada to suit the oil industry. And Canadians are just kind of like, oh yeah, that's cool. And then we've got our mayor in Toronto who it was proven through the courts that he you know, broke the law and they wanted to remove him, but no, then he you know, appealed and got to stay in office. He should have been out of there long ago because of what he did with you know, the fundraising for his football association.
Yeah, but it's also a thing too where it's like, if you know you have you know, dirt on you in some sense, you're not gonna be any safer when you're not mayor. No. Right? No. So it seems like I'm going to hold on to power because who knows? I can affect certain things from this position. If I'm out of here, I'm not going to have that same kind of sway. So, you know, it could literally for him be an issue of life and death in terms of holding on to the mayorship. Right. That is how he might be looking at it. We're like, oh, why won't this guy leave? Because he knows that there's wolves out there. And if he's not mayor, that's gonna make him more vulnerable.
And he knows that Canadians are passive.
Oh, yeah.
And are really not going to hold their government accountable, as we see. As mm-hmm. we see through all of these scandals that are happening at all levels of government. You know, and this is the thing that I think is the most disturbing, and that, you know, people really need to start participating in their so-called democracy, because it's a democracy. It's not, there is no democracy.
Well, this is one of the things that I respect about Americans is that, is, you know, when scandals or something like this happens, Americans get together and they affect change, or they go to Washington and they'll march on that. Whereas, you know, Canadians are a little bit more complacent. We're like, oh, well, you know, my life is good. It's not really affecting me personally, but it actually is affecting them personally.
Yeah. Well, and that's why Canadians need to get on board with the Indigenous Nationhood movement and the Idle No More movement, because Indigenous people have been leading the way in resisting, you know, the abuses of the Canadian government.
Oh, for sure.
And you know, and it's not just in the interest of Indigenous nationhood. It is in the interest of the Canadian public and the global public. I mean, when we're talking about the impact on water that fracking has, for example, and what we just saw in El Sepoktuk, where the RCMP was protecting corporate foreign interests for a Texas gas shale exploration company on unceded Indigenous territory, and it attacked. The RCMP went in, several hundred attacked this peaceful camp. It had been peaceful for months. They had been there for months peacefully, you know, occupying their unceded territory, protecting it from fracking. And, you know, and these are the sorts of resistance movements that have been happening. And I think really Canadians need to wake up to these things and, you know, recognize that, there is power in organizing and in solidarity.
Yeah, and I was thinking this morning, I've heard recently from friends and people going, well, people are people, you know, people lie, people cheat, people drink, I drink, people have fun, they do whatever. But in the same token, there are just certain jobs where, no, you gave that up. You people are looking up to you, children, people, whoever, I don't know. But you gave that up when you took that job. You have the responsibility to hold up to that. And yes, I understand that people are people, but I don't know. It's such a weird thing. And I think that's like a democratic thing to say.
Yeah, being drunk people on the Danforth was just too much. I mean, like, he should have known.
What,
you know,
that?
Like, this is the last place to go and have a bender.
I know.
Like, the ego
it's
and
like,
arrogance.
Then you can't be the mayor then. You can't be the mayor. You want to drink, then you can't do it. I'm sorry.
No, because, and let's talk about responsibility. I mean, you have a responsibility. You have a budget responsibility, an economic responsibility.
And you're representing the city, like, in global, like, you're going around representing Toronto. Any other job, you would get fired.
Yeah, probably.
That's true. Any other job, you would get
fired. I've known people.
Because you'd be representing, like, the company or whatever, like, if you're in a job.
But the biggest,
you can't go around being drunk and...
You can't look drunk, but some of the biggest, like, substance abusers are on, like, Bay Street.
Obviously,
or...
Oh, that's true.
Right?
That's true. That's
right?
So true.
It's because he looks... Job. Yeah, he looks bad. Like, I've known people...
Who are functional, yeah.
Drunk. When I say drunks, like, drink like rum like it's juice, and they're just juice. They're fine. It calms their nerves. They're like, yeah. Now I can think. I'm like, I would be dead like if I drank cocktail you drank. So it's like, yeah, there's this. It's also how he presents, because I mean,
right,
we
true.
Often have this idea of like a substance user looks like this, and most substance that's users true. They don't fit the stereotype, you know, because they can't afford the good drugs, right?
Yeah, he's starting not to be a functional drug.
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah.
I saw on Instagram yesterday, they were like, oh, they're going to put on eBay the tie he was wearing when he came and said that he smoked crack. And it was, I didn't notice it, but people did, because it was like a hockey tie with pucks on it. And it's just ridiculous that for him to be wearing that in general, to come out to make this speech about the fact that you smoke crack. And I couldn't stop laughing, but I was like, no, this is part of the thing. He's not a functioning...
He was conjuring the spirit of Don Cherry. scary.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think he ever was a functioning. I think that that's part of his appeal, though. I think he appeals to the everyday person who likes to see themselves reflected where they haven't been reflected before. And that's one of the genius things about him as a political figure.
Mm-hmm. Because of his sloppiness?
Yeah.
Because it looks sloppy.
I've seen
him in public and I've thought, his shirt wasn't tucked in properly. It was sloppy.
Yeah, and I think that appeals.
So that's the everyday person.
Yeah. Well, it appeals to people because it takes him off of that hierarchical stand that politicians tend to be put on, right, on this pedestal, and it sort of levels the playing field, so to speak. But we've seen him sloppy, and
But you know what? Obama did that when he went with Joe. Was it Joe Carpenter? Was that
Joe the plumber?
Joe the plumber, right? So he was making that connection. Like, these are the people that I want to help. But he didn't do it in a sloppy way, in my opinion.
But look at, like, the example, W. Bush, right? W.
W.
I miss him.
You got to miss George Bush a little bit, man. Like, you got to miss George Bush a little bit, you know? But it's like, it's that kind of populist, every person, every man appeal that, you know, Ford is on. And, like, you could literally go to Etobicoke at, like, 5 in the morning to a gas station, and you're going to see this guy there pumping gas next to you.
Probably.
Who knows where he's coming from or what he's done? But, like, and, like, that's kind of the appeal for certain people in that district. It's like, yo, you can actually see him. He's actually going to be at this football game coaching, screaming and swearing at the referees like all the other parents are, etc. And people will look at that and say, well, you can have this kind of like liberal elitist person who appears together, who God knows what they or their children do, or we can have this person who's actually in our community and he's a little bit messed up, but honestly, who isn't? We look at that as sincerity.
But then that's true. The whole point. Then you can't be a regular person and have that job. I just thought about that this morning. It's like, if you want to be that regular guy, then you can't be in power. And if people are going to vote those people, and then they're going to do regular people things, so don't complain about it when you vote them.
I think I'd rather have a beer with W than Rob Ford, though.
I think Rob Ford would be drinking your beer after a while.
I don't think I could tolerate a beer with any of them.
I want to just talk about that sort of that perception of that everyday sloppiness. Or that working class, because I think it's borderline classist, right?
Mm-hmm.
That working class people are bubbling, they're not intelligent, mm-hmm. And I don't know where that comes from, because I've known working class people that are really intelligent and
sharp,
on the ball and sharp.
Definitely.
So it really bothers me that sort of that myth, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, I think it's sort of like this borderline classism that, you can't be intelligent and be from the working class.
I think what is appealing is not that he's put on the same level as working class people, but that he's seen in all of his flaws. So there isn't that illusion of like, it's almost like a sterile persona that a lot of these politicians try to have, or like Justin Trudeau is trying to be down with, like, oh God, I can't stand his campaign.
Puke.
But the way in which they're trying to package that, similar to how Obama did it.
His hair is going to win him the president.
Yeah,
he doesn't have to be there. Just like his hair, like
just his hair. You
his
know
hair
what?
At the debate, and he wins.
We're at the end of our hour, and we've got music to play for the listeners. But this has been a really, really invigorating. I want to thank Glenn Pennell and Joella Crichton for joining us today to talk about mental health issues. And the Rendezvous with Madness Film Festival is taking place this week.
Yes, everybody come out. It's a great festival. If you haven't been before, it's amazing.
And the session is also starting this week, and that is taking place at the
Red Sandcastle Theater.
922 Queen Street East. And you could go to their website and get tickets.
And the website for...
is rendezvouswithmadness.com.
Excellent. So thank you to you both for joining us for this roundtable talk on mental health and politics.
Thank you.
And arts and all of those things. So we're the Vibe Collective. We're heard every Saturday from 3 to 5. From 3 to 4, we have roundtable reasonings. Talk about things like politics, social justice, environmental racism, celebrity studies.
Studies.
And hip-hop love, arts, culture. We're going to get to some music after the break here on the Vibe Collective CIUT 89.5 FM.